The Forum on Workplace Inclusion's 2022 podcast series is sponsored by Best Buy. More diversity in tech means more ideas that can change the world. Learn more at bestbuy.com/moreofthis. Registration is now open to the Forum's 34th annual conference, Solving for X, Tackling Inequities in a World of Unknowns. The Forum on Workplace Inclusion Annual Conference is the United States' largest workplace diversity, equity, and inclusion conference designed for a national and global audience. Maximize your budget and register today by taking advantage of early bird prices, but hurry, because our early bird rates won't last forever. Visit forumworkplaceinclusion.org for more information and to register. That's forumworkplaceinclusion.org. Thank you to all our listeners and subscribers. You help support the growth of the podcast and reach new listeners. If you like what you're hearing on the Forum podcast, please consider writing a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you've already written a review, thank you. Please consider sharing our podcast with a friend, family member, or a colleague you think might find value in the content. Word of mouth is the best way the Forum grows, so thank you very much for listening and sharing. Thanks again, and enjoy the show.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Forum on Workplace Inclusion podcast series brought to you by Best Buy. I'm Ben Rue, Program Manager here at the Forum. We're really looking forward to today's podcast, Courageously Hack into DEI Opportunities, with Yolanda Simmons-Emmanuel of the Shaw Sky Group and Patrick Menabon, the Courage Hacker. This is the first podcast of our 2022 series, and we think it's a great way to start. By 2050, the demographic trends indicate a minority-majority shift where Blacks, Asians, Hispanics, and other racial minority groups will become the majority of the population, bringing mixed emotions regarding what work, life, and society will look like. In a recent Pew Research Center survey of adults, 35% felt the shift is very/somewhat good, 42 were neither good nor bad, and 23 felt it is a very/somewhat bad. With more than half of adults uncertain of the benefits of a minority-majority shift, what are vital diversity leadership skills that can be applied to create more inclusive, equitable, and sustainable workspaces? In this episode, Yolanda and Patrick will anchor the conversation at the intersection of research, storytelling, and application, where one uses agency three levels, self, proxy, and organizational, to strengthen vital diversity leadership skills to nurture inclusive workspaces. After this podcast, listeners will be able to courageously hack self-doubt, uncertainty, and fear that holds back leaders in diverse settings. Use knowledge sharing to explore the unknown and the new way of working with diverse professionals, and apply multiple leadership lenses to help employees work passionately in diverse workspaces. Yolanda Simmons-Emmanuel has over 20 years of experience in business and hospital administration. She began her career in manufacturing as purchasing agent with the Virgin Islands and Lumina Corporation, and eventually led the entire purchasing and inventory control team as the buy/supply administration with St. Croix Aluminum. In 2001, Yolanda transitioned into the healthcare field and assumed the role of director, purchasing, and inventory control at the Governor Juan F. Luis Hospital and Medical Center. Throughout her 11 years at the hospital, her demonstrated leadership operations and communication skills earned her numerous executive management positions. In 2013, she was recruited by her former CEO to work in Minnesota on his transition team at Northern Health Science University. During her time in Minnesota, she discovered her passion for coaching and leveraging the strengths of each team member to create thriving workplace environments. She is a life coach practitioner and has a mastery level certification, which complements her transitional servant leadership style. In 2017, Yolanda moved to Orlando, Florida, where she is currently the senior consultant at Urbaner, specializing in strategic marketing, business development, and diversity and inclusion, as well as the co-founder of the Shaw Sky Group, work, passion consulting, and coaching. She is currently pursuing a PhD in industrial organizational psychology. Her dissertation is focused on predicting work passion, an analysis of organizational, job, and relationship characteristics, work climate, mindfulness, and motivation with healthcare middle managers that self-identify as people of color. From a class valedictorian who attempted to skip speaking at his own high school graduation due to a speech impediment, to being named a District 6 finalist in the 2015 Toastmasters International Contest, one win away from qualifying for the World Championship of Public Speaking, Patrick set himself a seemingly impossible goal, overcome insecurities around his stutter, enter one of the scariest industries in the world, and become a professional speaker. Today, with a unique combination of charisma, humility, and vulnerability, Patrick guides audiences through unforgettable experiences that help them master their courage to raise their hand, step up, and step out. He is author of the upcoming book, Be Unmesswithable, Quit Playing Imposter and Spectator, Raise Your Hand, Step Up, and Step Out. Patrick holds an MBA in Project Management from St. Mary's University of Minnesota, Minneapolis, and a Bachelor's of Arts in Computer Information Systems from Metropolitan State University in St. Paul, Minnesota. He is a mind mapping and copywriting fanatic, tennis and belt buckle enthusiast. He was born in Liberia, West Africa, and currently lives in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Thank you, Ben. Greeting, listening audience. I am Shalonda Simmons-Emmanuel of the Shiskai Group, and joining me today is my colleague,
Patrick Manabon, the Courage Hacker, and you are in for a treat.
So before we dive into our topic, Patrick and I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Forum on Workplace Inclusion for this opportunity for us to share our perspectives and experiences on how to courageously hack your DEI opportunities. Well, folks, let's dive right in.
So the whole world is changing. There's a huge shift in the dynamics between the minority and the majority groups. And especially in 2020, when there was this widespread panic and anxiety among people and how to handle a lot of the issues that came along with, you know, how do we get people included and equality and diversity. So this podcast is, you are going to walk away with understanding of DEI opportunities from three perspectives, from the self, from the proxy, which is with others or through others, and from the organizational big picture. And we will bring together how they all can help make diversity inclusion more of something that really works and something that is more talked about. So let's do that, Shona.
Awesome, Patrick. So for us to be able to level set, and since you are the Courage Hacker, could you help our listening audience understand what we're referring to? Can you give us a working definition of what it's like to courageously hack?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. So there are millions of definitions of courage, and I'm not even going to touch them because we do not have a problem of lack of knowledge. People can find knowledge everywhere. But courage for me is more in terms of a formula. I say courage is equal to will plus imagination plus audacity. That's my courage formula. And with that, courage hacking is essentially how can you use your level of bravery, whatever it is, whatever level, and the imagination of possible outcomes and options that could be available to you, and put a little bit of risk taking to it. So you get to figure out what level of courage works for you, what, you know, size of courage works for you, but you use little hacks, little courage models to see what works for you. And that's what courage hacking is, to determine what works for you to get you from where you are to where you want to go. It's a lot of fun.
Yes. So courage equals will plus imagination plus audacity. That is a really good segue into our first learning objective. So let's talk about courageously hacking self-doubt, uncertainty, and fear that hold back leaders in diverse settings. Coming from the perspective of self, that would involve engaging in self-exploration and enhancing your self-awareness, correct? It would also involve you assessing your level of readiness to really seize those DEI opportunities and then mastering the courage to really act on it. So in your Courageous Hacker work, you developed the Acknowledge Resolve Master model, which is your courage self-mastery system. Could you share the model or blueprint for helping individuals embrace and redefine their perceived limitations?
Yeah, so I grew up, my mom, actually, if you're probably wondering, oh, this guy has an accent. Well, if it's from Minnesota.
No, it isn't.
I'm originally
from but it's not from Minnesota.
I'm originally from West Africa, specifically a country called Liberia. And my mom said she first observed at the age of 8 that I stuttered. Mm-hmm. And when she told me, I'm wondering, gosh, what happened between age 7 and age 8? And then we quickly realized that every one of us have some insecurity that define our life or that we allow to define our life. So for me, most of that insecurity was around stuttering to the point that even in high school, I actually graduated as my class valedictorian. Thank you very much. But I was so afraid to speak that I went to the school principal and told her I was not going to speak. I'm going to skip the graduation. How embarrassing is that? But that is the level of intimidation that our insecurity have on us. Mm-hmm. So, and when I say us, it has on our self-image. Mm-hmm. The self-image is everything. And self-image is essentially your opinion of yourself based on what? Based on our experiences, based on our successes, based on what other people have told us, how we grew up, the environment, everything. And this self-image is basically what controls our life. So that would be a particular day you do the best thing because it's your higher self that has taken over. And the next time you go to the worst. Why? Because your self-image has always been tied to the worst thing. So it automatically adjusts you back to where it thinks you should be. And the courage model, which is ARM, we stand for the first thing is to acknowledge, resolve, and then master. What are we acknowledging? Everything starts with self-awareness. Everything starts with awareness. When you become aware, what does that mean? It means we look at our experiences. We look at our interactions. We look at the things that we raised. We look at the things that we did not raise. And then we look at it and see some of the impacts. Like in my case, I almost skipped my high school graduation, but I also didn't tell you when I was in ninth grade, which is I also graduated at the top of my class, valedictorian, and I skipped that one. And regret starts to pile up. So when you look at these things, you see the pain, you see the anguish, you see the frustration that you cannot do anything, and it defines you. It defines the kind of relationship that you pursue, the kind of work, kind of opportunities, the kind of whatever present itself, your self-image checks that. That's what acknowledge is. We go through that process of looking and seeing.
So can you share with us with the acknowledge? You had mentioned when we were preparing for the podcast about a chance taker versus a risk taker.
Interesting. Yes. Again, it comes to the self-image. So when you have stuttered all your life, mm-hmm. and every time you open your mouth, it's a recipe for your whole self-esteem to go down to nothing. So you get defined by things people hand to you versus, well, I'm not taking what you just handed to me. I rather take a risk. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking that $20 job that you gave me. I will go for the $100 job. And again, when the people around you who haven't had a $20 job before, they would say, you crazy to turn down a $20 job? That $100 job is a fantasy. That's the essential difference between taking risks and taking chances. When you take chances, we just flow into the next thing that shows up. And we think it's an opportunity. So you at work, some position open is not what you want, but it's the next chance. When you take risks, you actually risk something. The possibility that it may not happen. When you take chances, it wasn't planned. You just lock into it or you just slide into it. And that's the essential difference when you acknowledge, when you look at your life, when you see, oh, I've always just been following what has come. Now you start to question something. You start to question yourself. Start to question your initiative. You start to question your self-image. And that's why when you lead into resolve.
So tell us a little bit about the result, because with resolve, you're talked about the courage consciousness.
Yes, you are good. Wow. I think I should just let you present. You are really good. So the courage consciousness, there are three levels of courage consciousness. And I think we have all experienced it in our life. The first one is courage happens to you, courage happens for you, and courage happens through you. So naturally, there is an endless, abundant supply of courage. It is always there. But courage is only triggered by a demand. And naturally, Mother Nature creates the demand. You get fired from your job. Boom, you got a demand. Or your house is on fire and you do something miraculous. That's a demand. Mm-hmm. Or whatever it is, a mother runs in the road because her child is there and a car is coming. That she did not ask for it. Is courage happening to her?
So could we reflect back on 2020? Because when we opened the podcast, you mentioned the demographic shift, but also in 2020, what happened was COVID. And I think COVID-19 is an excellent example for how something happens to you, how it happens for you, it happens through you, and one's level of readiness to act courageously.
Yes.
So for example, happening to you, when COVID-19 first hit, it was a global pandemic. Yes. It was a phenomenon that was happening to everybody, regardless of their race, age, gender, nationality, socioeconomic status. And of course, we all felt initially those feelings of uncertainty, of anxiety, fear, and hopelessness. So on the human level, it impacted everyone. But for some, the disparities were more extenuating than others for certain demographics. We have to acknowledge that.
Correct.
But fundamentally, for all of us, we did feel that self-doubt, that uncertainty, and that fear. And for businesses also, all businesses, regardless of their sizes, their industry, their location, also felt the impact of COVID happening to them, right? So that was in the initial stages.
Yes.
We weren't ready. I don't think anybody was quite ready for what COVID was going to present and how it was going to change the trajectory of all our lives. So then when we take COVID again and we look at it for you, as happening for you. Well, we didn't want COVID. It forced many of us to pause.
Right.
It forced many of us to reflect on our lives as well as to reevaluate our priorities, not only on the human level, but also from a work and a business operations perspective, right? So yes, while there's still feelings of uncertainty after that initial shock and months in quarantine, people still feeling overwhelmed with work and homeschooling, many seeked creative outlets. TikTok boomed. Everybody was doing TikTok videos.
Correct.
You know, entrepreneurship boomed. People started doing, started their own businesses. Amongst that plethora of emotions, because we had gone through the initial shock, and then we're trying to figure out how do we navigate through this new normal, right? So correct. There was a fundamental shift of perspectives and priorities, which happened for us as it highlighted many areas in our life and our work that were not working before COVID, right?
Yes.
And that could work, but may have been resisted before, like remote work, people working from home.
That's the imagination in the courage formula.
Absolutely. And how to create those new opportunities. So you go through that level of readiness of something happening to you, that initial shock happening for you. You're trying to maneuver and adjust to then happening through you.
Correct.
Right. So now that we've been through COVID for over a year and we're dealing with deltas and all of that stuff, I think we're starting to get into a little bit of a rhythm, because that time of pause or happening for you in many ways provided opportunities for us to be creative and think differently.
Yes.
So for example, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, startups during COVID skyrocketed. Okay, according to the census, more than 4.4 million new businesses were created in the U.S. during 2020, the highest total on record. When times get hard, you just mentioned it earlier, you know, a kid is in the road and a mother has to go rescue. It's a demand, right? It pushes you out of your comfort zone, right? So when things get hard, people become creative, people get entrepreneurial.
Yep.
Do we think that we would be where we are now had it not been for COVID in 2020?
Probably not. We'd be taking the next chance.
Yes, instead of being a risk-taker. Yeah. Absolutely. So when you look at that personal reassessment that many people underwent, and we look at what's happening now, the buzz and what's trending is this great resignation.
Yes.
Right? People are leaving work, or people are moving from one job to the next, or people are starting entrepreneurship, and it's happening across all demographic sectors, right?
That's so the audacity.
That's the audacity. In a recent Human Resource Executive article, it stated, employees appear to be reevaluating their priorities amidst a disruptive and deadly global pandemic. And the fact that work might no longer be the key factor they use to define themselves as individuals.
Correct.
So this has really left business leaders and organizations scrambling to figure out how to retain or hire employees. Do you think this would have happened had it not been for COVID?
Oh, it's interesting, because we are, you know, previously it used to be, this is a company with a mission. We all heard that. But now it's a mission with a company. You have to recruit, you have to get people to buy into the mission, because now it becomes a movement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's a really good example of a circumstance or a phenomenon that can happen to you, that can happen for you, but can also be a catalyst to take it and courageously hack opportunities for it to happen through you.
Yes.
So with that, Patrick, how do we master courage? Share the acronym for master courage with us.
This is the sweet passion. It is master part of the formula is where you be your courage, where you close the gap. There is gap in every one of us life. Everybody has a gap between who they are inside and who they show up as outside. There is some level of incongruency. That's a big word. But there is some level of incongruency, and this is where we close the gap. where I show up closer to who I really am. And that's mastering courage. This is where we evolve, we put it to work. And the courage, the C in courage stands for care. Courage is not possible if we don't care. The courage to care is the fundamental piece of courage. It's also the courage not to care, but it can go both ways depending on. Then the O is where we own it. We own our actions. We own our opportunities 100% because honestly, nobody owes her anything. There is somebody, I don't remember her name, but she said, there is an expiration date for blaming your parents or an expiration date for blaming anybody. That's the ownership. And that is the one thing that changed my life. When I wanted to blame my mom for leaving, I wanted to blame somebody for this, and I couldn't blame anybody. And so I had to own my own stuff. Then the you are unmessable. You are worth. So unmessable is my portrait. By the way, I'm writing a book called Be Unmessable. So when you are unmessable, you are living your values. You're living on your terms. You in charge of your thoughts and emotions. You are unstoppable. You are unshakable. You can step out and speak up. Then the R, this is not possible if you cannot recruit yourself. Whatever your mission is, if you cannot recruit yourself, it's already dead. And this is one of the most strategic area in hacking into DEI opportunities, because when we take our curiosities and turn it into passion, and we take our passion and turn it into purpose, and we take our purpose and we recruit others. So that's where you recruit yourself and recruit others. We turn it into a movement. When we recruit others to our cause, that's one of the hacking. When we recruit others to our cause, to our mission, to our whatever it is. And the A is the ask. But if you look at ask, it breaks down into ask, seek, and knock. I actually A-S-K. Stole that from the Bible.
A-S-K, ask, seek, and knock.
I actually stole that from the Bible. Whoa. the guy stole it from the Bible too. But it spells ask. The courage to ask for what you want. You may not get it, but at least you ask. The courage to seek, go knocking. Go knocking down whatever it is, but seeking and asking, ask and knock. Then the fundamental of a lot of things is to give. You give of yourself and you give to other people. You give of your time, mentorship. You give of your experiences. Personally, I love to teach. And so I just love knowledge sharing and just giving stuff like that. But we have to evolve. We have to live our values. We have to live our principles. We have to raise our standards. That's how we evolve. I can't remember who said it, but they said that the easiest way to change your life is to raise your standards, because it compels you and everybody else to step up. So that's master courage in different ways, but this is where you actually take some action in different shapes and form. The courage to care, the courage to own yourself, to own everything 100%. It is not what happens to you, it's how you respond to it. So
having the courage to hack self-doubt, uncertainty, and fear begins with acknowledge that self-awareness piece that we spoke about earlier. It's to resolve, really identify and accepting that level of readiness to confront those things, feelings, and circumstances that are happening to you for you and through you. Correct. And then master courage, where C is for care, always for own, and be open to opportunities.
Yes.
U is for you are worth it. R is for recruit yourself and others. A is for ask, seek, and knock. G is for give of yourself and give to yourself, going back to that self-care component. And mm-hmm. D is to really be able to evolve.
Yeah.
So that really wraps up number one.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. The first thing we got to be who we are. And yeah. That's where it starts.
Absolutely. It's interesting that we're talking about this topic of courage, because we picked this topic months ago, but recently it's been trending on LinkedIn, article by Dr. Carrie Yazeed that talks about the danger of courage culture and why Brené Brown is not a good fit for Black folk. Now, for all those Brené Brown fans out there, I'm a fan. I'm not focusing on that part of the title, okay? But it's she provides an interesting perspective about courage culture and how showing up courageously looks different from maybe a Brené Brown who is a white Caucasian woman and Dr. Carrie Yazeed, who is a woman of color. Because while the messages may be the same, sometimes the audiences put more emphasis on the messenger, right? Than on the actual message. But also, when those two individuals show up in a space, is there a different system, operating system, kind of like with a computer, a Mac versus a PC? Is there a different operating system based on who the messenger is and the characteristics of that messenger as they show up, right?
I would not disagree that there is, because, I mean, there's a parable back in Liberia that says, the place people will scream and yell, you just go there and whisper, you will get in trouble. The point, though, is going back to the courage formula, is that imagination piece. That's what separates us from other, from everybody else. How creative we can get with how to bypass those filters.
Right.
That's the piece. So why courage for, you know, somebody like a Brené Brown will be different? We still have that imagination component where we can figure out how to beat whatever the system is at its own game by finding the little gaps.
It's interesting you say that, because for the, you know, the scholars and the academic geeks like myself, I love the data, and it's so interesting. We have different dynamics, right? You're coming with the lovey-feely human element side, and I'm really focused on the data, which kind of shatters stereotypes of gender, because we usually expect women to be the mushy ones and the men to be the data-driven one. But that's a whole other podcast conversation. But what's interesting about what we're talking about is when you look at social cognitive theory, it is funded on the underlying belief that human beings are both products and producers of their life circumstances and social environment.
Correct.
That's Albert Bandura, the founder of social cognitive theory, says that. So since humans typically do not function in total isolation, void of other human beings, there needs to be an ability to intentionally influence others, to advocate and secure resources on one's behalf, right? Whether it's a personal or a collective goal.
Yes.
Also, one's ability to influence others and groups within their environment and their society. That's the collective factor.
That's the recruit in the courage formula.
Absolutely. And that's necessary in order to navigate our internal and external worlds to accomplish our goals, right? So let's go to number two. Let's explore number two of our lesson learning objectives for this podcast: exploring knowledge sharing to confront the fear of the unknown and the new ways of working. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the reason why I personally believe this is a game changer is because we do not have a problem of knowledge. So 20, 30 years ago, you had to go, you had to leave your house, put on your shoes, put on your pants, it is snowing, put on a jacket and go to a library.
Now we have information at our fingertips.
You got information. As a matter of fact, we got information overload that even prevents us from acting. I'm a big witness that sometimes I'm stuck because I have information overload. What is missing is people have the knowledge but not doing what they know to do. And that is where that little knowledge sharing about, hey, I've been there before. I've done that. I have accomplished, I have gotten to this political office. I have published this book. I have been in this position. This is the secret. This is how you beat the system. This is how you hack into those opportunities when they arrive, because the opportunities will show up where you'll be ready to hack it. And that's the reason why I really think this is the game changer, because again, it goes to the imagination when people get helped.
Right. And I will say that when it comes to venturing out into the unknown, it is very easy to fear what you do not know.
Correct.
And so what's great about knowledge sharing is that research has shown that it's an effective intervention to address new ways of working challenges, right?
Right.
Particularly the article I'm referring to is Sing 2020. And they did a study when it came to intergenerational learning during the crisis, such as the current pandemic. And it's a simple and powerful system and strategies to recognize, identify, and disable feelings of uncertainty and reframe the unknown.
Reframe.
Into a knowledge sharing opportunity, allowing for a more enjoyable exploratory exchange that would create a network of understanding among workers. So let me break that down, right? Because that was a mouthful.
Break it down, sister.
So let's look at the knowledge sharing intervention on an individual level. Let's say on a one-on-one level. It's as simple and as informal as seeking out coworkers that have very different backgrounds as you and inviting them to have lunch and having a genuine, engaging conversations and trying to understand their perspectives, try to understand their experiences, right, that are different than you. And it could be even more formal program like reverse mentoring. Right. And in the study that I referred to, reverse mentoring included four characteristics. It included the unequal status of partners. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a supervisor with an employee. It could be a peer to peer. Right.
Correct.
The aim of sharing knowledge. And I think that's what's interesting about you and I as colleagues is you have a very different background than I do. And it was us having these kind of conversations where we get to learn about each other's backgrounds. And now Africa is my go-to because it's not as scary because I know from Liberia, right? I know somebody from Liberia.
That is good. Yeah. That is really good.
Yeah. And it also promotes leadership knowledge and mutual support.
Correct. Correct.
So I think we tend to focus on what's different. And what's nice about these knowledge sharing interventions on an individual level is that you're able to, yes, come from different perspectives, but you tend to find out that we're not that different after all.
And that is completely true, because if I walk into a room without people knowing anything about me but what I look like physically, the natural human instinct, I will gravitate to people who look and sound like me. Oh, they are all Liberians. Oh, I recognize that accent.
But it's almost like high school again in the cafeteria. Exactly. Right, all the jocks
sat together. We go and sit with the same people for lunch. But you observe at some point in time, we stop sitting with the people who wouldn't necessarily look like us, but we were in the same class. That's why we sat together. So again, it goes back to who is your tribe?
Right.
What is your tribe?
And usually your tribe are based on values.
Values. And that's exactly what the point.
And norms. Yeah.
What's your value-based tribe? And I mean, I'm a part of a group of, you know, copywriters. I love that group because that's the core of our thing. We enjoy copywriting. So what is the value that whole you and whatever the tribe is?
Well, as you talk about the tribe, you're looking at it from the government and team level, right? This knowledge sharing.
Correct.
And there needs to be an intentionality where you're creating a climate that is conducive and embraces diversity within the workplace, right? For diverse leaders to really hack these DE&I opportunities, you know, it is that one-on-one. They need to put themselves out there and put themselves in uncomfortable situations to learn about people within their organization or community that are very different than who they are. But on a group level, it's really trying to be an ally and nurture a work climate where your team or your unit or your group can really embrace each other's differences and see the value. That's one of the things I liked about StrengthFinder, right? Because there was an organization I went into, I was a branch manager, I had about 15 employees. And when I walked in, because people were different, they weren't even speaking to each other when I first started working. And we used StrengthFinders, for example, and this is not an endorsement, this is just an example. And we did the assessment and then I mapped my team. And we looked at the four main areas, the people who are really strong in executing, people who are really strong in relationship building, people who are really strong in analyzing, you know, people who are really strong in supporting. And then we, once we knew who had the different strengths, right? So that's the differences.
Correct.
We saw how we could complement each other's strengths for us to be an efficient team, for us to be a cohesive team, even though we're very different. Once we saw that opportunity to create an environment where we can collaborate and complement each other, it takes it to the next level.
Yes.
And so you looked at the individual, you look at the team, but then there's an organizational level. And one of the things, as we were preparing for this podcast, you brought up was the mellow innovation.
Yeah. Mellow innovation was a company, I think they're in Michigan. I actually learned about them when I was preparing to become a Scrum Master and product owner. I took the class from the same guy. But Mellow Innovations is a small company that emphasizes one thing. We will vacuum fear from the room.
Wow.
That was their foundational belief. We will vacuum fear from the room. And I think if people don't leave here with anything, but just how can you help to remove fear from the room where people can share that point of view? So whether you're the president of the company or you, whatever is considered the whatever it is down there, how can you vacuum fear from the room? So they have open door policy on a lot of things. They posted people's salaries, even though I was not in favor of that, but but it was open door policy at Menlo Innovations?
And I think it was probably more than an open door policy, because we hear open door policy, we think that the leader is accessible to
correct. Good point.
Employee. I think it's taking it to the other level of transparency and consistency.
Actually, that's the word, the transparency. Yes.
Yeah, because you know, you need to be transparent as a leader if you're going to be leading diverse teams. You need to be able to say, you know, I really don't know anything about this nationality or about the culture. Can you teach me?
Yes.
That's a level of vulnerability, transparency, and consistency in your actions really reinforcing what you say. Because people now more than ever feel empowered. And with social media, you know, people have the keyboard at their fingertips. If you say you're going to do something and you do something contradictory, you will be held accountable.
I even heard, I did not know this, okay? But I have learned it since. I heard that the guy who was the president said, he doesn't treat people equally. He treats people fairly. I'm like, whoa, what is that? It didn't make sense to me then. But when I thought about it, we actually don't treat people equally.
Mm-hmm.
We treat people fairly. So if you put in the effort, you get rewarded. That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
How do you treat people equally? You just promote the opportunities and let people dive into it.
Right.
But you have to, going back to what you said, there is that initiative that has to spark something.
So really approaching these D&I opportunities from a perspective of curiosity and knowledge sharing creates an openness to courageously explore the unknown with people that have different backgrounds, experiences, and beliefs than you. And with the culture shift or the demographic shift in the U.S. that's becoming increasingly more diverse, that means workplace dynamic is going to continue to change. So the social change and the demographic shifts are not only impacting the work environment from a race, ethnicity, and nationality standpoint, but it's also from a generational, gender identity, socioeconomic, and other cultural dimensions. Fundamentally, is anything that involves just being a human being.
Good point. Very good point.
So therefore, leaders, it's imperative for leaders to understand the culture and the context of not only individuals and their teams, but also from the perspective of the organization.
Yes.
Then this brings us to our courageously hacking number 3, applying multiple leadership lenses regarding how employees can work passionately in diverse workspaces.
That's a good one.
Did you want to jump in?
Now you're trying to tease me. The one of the best examples that I have, I was actually in a company in Minnesota and we got a new boss. You know, he comes in, like all managers, the first thing they do, they schedule one-on-ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you, well, tell me what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I don't know where it came from. I just told the guy, before I tell you what I do, you got to know who I am.
Mm. Talk about being courageous.
I know. He was shocked. You could see the shock on his face, but he did well to contain himself. And one of the things that led from that experience, he and I became so close. He was even, I would consider, proxy for me, which is number 2 that we're talking about, where he was an advocate. But the best part about it is, now that we're talking about the organization, he was one of those people, the managers, who could meet people at their own level, wherever their level was. He knew that. And when we look at the last 20 years, 30 years, everybody trying to train skill sets and competencies.
Mm-hmm.
But those with change, those have changed over the last 20 years, the last 10 years, skill sets have changed. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the emotional intelligence that requires to relate to people, that requires to recruit people to your cause, that requires to influence people. And this is where the bigger, you know, organization have to understand what drives their employees.
And, you know, I think what's important for leaders to understand is the same way you evaluate your employee. Your employees are evaluating certain characteristics of the leader, of the job, of the organization. And that's one of the reasons that I really like the Employee Work Pressure and Appraisal Model by Dr. Dre Zaghari. Because what he talks about is employees are continuously, every day, every hour, every minute, consciously or subconsciously, appraising the job, the organization, and the relational characteristics, right? Which are critical concepts when you start looking at exploring things like meaningful work, distributive and procedural justice, among others. And those are directly tied to some of the underlying reasons we're seeing this great resignation. So how an employee thinks cognitively, correct, and feels affect about their work and their work environment and their relationships in the workplace influences their work intention, right? To stay or to go.
Correct.
And this is important because as employees are continuously evaluating, leaders need to understand that as the current environment changes and the workplace changes and society changes, the employees are also changing. And so to your point, when you met with that leader the first time, leaders need to understand humans are not machines.
Oh.
Don't ask me what I do. Employees want you to
that's
ask
the point.
Who I am.
Correct.
Then we can get to what I can do.
Because that is so profound what you just said, because after that conversation, he recognized that I had been in that role for 2 years and I was already frustrated wanting to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then he figured out how to get me more involved because now he's my advocate.
Yeah.
He's essentially my friend.
Yeah.
And that's why putting those kind of structure in place that take away fear, completely vacuum fear from the room.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if I thought that I could get fired for saying, before I tell you about my work, you got to get to know me.
Yeah.
But I think the core responsibility of the organization is to put those infrastructure in place that vacuum fear from the room.
Mm-hmm. And it really comes from having a servant leadership perspective where you're able to also have transformational leadership skills.
Correct.
That are also inclusive for the diverse employees that you're going to have in your organization. So Harvard Business Review had an article back 2020 that talks about the key of inclusive leadership, and they cite six mm-hmm. leadership skills. And it goes to your point where technical skills are always changing and you're always going to have to work on that. But the emotional intelligence is important. That's the soft skills that we really need to be focused on as we think of the future of work, because particularly as you start to go into AI, machines are learning how to do those technical right. things, but they're not, they haven't yet learned the capacity. Let me not say they can't, right? Because things are happening in technology, the advancement of technology that's just, we hadn't even thought of 5 years ago. But to my point, those inclusive leadership skills, the six of them, and I'm going to share them quickly, is visible commitment, which you talked about, right? Mm-hmm. The leader really needs to articulate an authentic commitment to diversity, to challenge that status quo and hold others accountable, right? And making DE&I opportunities for all fairly, something that's a priority for them. The humility, right? Admitting mistakes and creating a space for others to contribute and for people to be able to make mistakes, because at the end of the day, we're all human. And that's fundamentally how we learn, right? Hopefully you use it as an opportunity for learning. Awareness of bias. That's a big one when you talk about DE&I opportunities, because we all have biases regardless. Yes. Once you're human, you have biases, conscious or unconscious.
Speak for yourself, my friend.
No, I'm telling you.
Just joking.
I can speak for you too, because you're human, my friend. Because they show an awareness of personal blind spots as
that,
well as
that is so true. That is so true.
Because you have to be, you know, be aware of what your biases are. Curiosity about others. We talked about that a lot,
correct?
You know, in number one. Cultural intelligence. Really being attentive and learning about other people's culture and being able to adapt. You know, I think we are in this mode, especially socially, of polarities. Mm-hmm. It's either or. No, there's always an and.
Right.
It just is a it's how do we find it? Sometimes it takes some conversations to find the and to reduce the gap between the polarities.
Ooh,
and then I'm preaching.
Yeah, I know.
And then effective collaboration. They really empower others. You know, they pay attention to those diverse thinking and they really try to create a space where people have. They feel like they can be their authentic selves. And fundamentally, I think that's what everybody wants, and that hopefully will contribute to team cohesion and will contribute to greater performance for the organization overall, you know?
Yes.
So we gave our audience a lot to think about.
I know. Wow. That was really good.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. You want to tell us what some of the takeaways are?
So we
have three.
We got a treat for you guys. we will get, you know, handouts with some of the top 10 ways to creatively, you know, courageously hack into your opportunity so that you are more confident, influential, and impactful wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
It all starts with know thyself.
Yep. Acknowledge, resolve, master.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then like my friend, you know, at work, I told you about, we can build a proxy, somebody who is our advocate, somebody who is our champion.
Yeah.
Somebody who can, well, in those rooms that we cannot be in, somebody is there advocating a policy that will happen for you.
Yeah.
You see, so it's really, on that?
Yeah. And the thing is that happens because you've taken the time to intentionally do that knowledge sharing on the individual level, correct, by confronting the fear of the unknown and looking for new ways of working, so that when you're not in the room, you have somebody else in the room to be able to advocate for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most effective ways I've learned, you probably heard it a million times, just sometimes ask somebody to tell me your story.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
simple?
Because
we all have a story.
And we all have something that triggers something in our life. And when you look, then we talk about the proxy, but then the big picture, the organization have to put that environment where if they completely vacuum out fear, that we don't.
Not only the environment, but they have to put leaders,
correct,
that are also in step with that underlying belief of embracing diversity and removing that fear of the unknown within the organization to move people forward. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
This is a lot of fun. We got the handouts that will list, give you top 10 things that you can work on right away. You know, like first thing tomorrow morning, when you wake up, before you get into your routine or you start thinking about your problem, stop. Mm-hmm. Let's think about, who do I want to be today? And what are those thoughts and those feelings and those beliefs that no longer serve me?
Mm-hmm.
Like for instance, me, sometimes I'm like, gosh, I was trying to get attention so much last week. That was not me.
So mm-hmm.
You wake up, nah, that attention getting thing did not serve me right. So
yeah,
that's one thing you can do tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Listen, Patrick, this has been awesome. You know, when you think of the topic of courageously hacking DEI opportunities, it's really about courageously hacking one's feelings that may impede their openness and willingness to engage in knowledge sharing, where they can learn from others unlike themselves and adapt to this changing workforce.
Yes.
They can better assess the environment to passionately engage in DE&I spaces. And really to further support that statement, in the 2020 article, Emerge Stronger, Architecting a More Inclusive and Equitable Future of Work report, where it states, one thing is certain. We must demonstrate and document how the DE&I lens is one of the most powerful tools to tackle challenges in an uncertain, unpredictable landscape.
Yes.
And with that, Patrick, I've had a lot of fun having this conversation with you.
Oh, it was all my fun. Pleasure.
Thank you to our listening audience for joining us. Be well.
Thank you both so much for this wonderful podcast. As I said, a great way to kick off our 2022 season. Thank you to our listeners and our sponsor, Best Buy. I hope you're all feeling much more courageous. To learn more about leading courageously, you can email Shalonda at sau@sausky.com. That's shaw@shawsky.com. And find Patrick online at www.patrickmenabun.com. New episodes of The Forum podcast are available at theforumworkplaceinclusion.org/podcast. You can also find our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and Stitcher. Thank you again for listening and have a great day.
Thank you again for listening to the Forum and Workplace Inclusion podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get updates and the latest episodes. Also, tell us what you think by reviewing our podcast. We'd love to hear your feedback. For more information, visit us at forumworkplaceinclusion.org or search Workplace Forum on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Thank you very much and have a great day. The Forum on Workplace Inclusion podcast is recorded at Augsburg University in Minneapolis, Minnesota. One of the most diverse private colleges in the Midwest, Augsburg University offers more than 50 undergraduate majors and 9 graduate degrees to 3,400 students of diverse backgrounds at its campus in the vibrant center of the Twin Cities and nearby Rochester, Minnesota location. Augsburg educates students to be informed citizens, thoughtful stewards, critical thinkers, and responsible leaders. An Augsburg education is defined by excellence in the liberal arts and professional studies, guided by the faith and values of the Lutheran Church, and shaped by its urban and global settings. Learn more at augsburg.edu.